everyone, and welcome to another episode of Talking to Change, a motivational interviewing podcast. My name is Sebastian Kaplan, and I'm based in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, USA. And as always, joined by my good friend from Derry, Northern Ireland, Glenn Hines. Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Seb. How are you doing?
Doing okay here. You know, we are in the age of lockdowns and shelter in places, stay at home orders. And so we're doing our best to keep away from mass gatherings and stuff like that. How about you up there in Northern Ireland?
Yeah. So today is Sunday, the 29th of March, and our own government just brought in new regulations yesterday that if you're caught outside the house not doing something essential, that you're liable to a fine. So I was driving to the office today going, I'm going to do a podcast.
Right.
You know, so it's an essential thing. This is my work. So it is strange. It's definitely strange. And as I was saying off air before we came online, that myself and Lisa, my wife, stood in our back garden this morning. And it was amazing just how quiet it was other than the bird life. So people are following, by and large, the regulations and the advice and endeavoring to protect themselves and their families and the community.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something that's happening here. The roads are really quiet. The streets are quiet and the birds are not, thankfully. Our birds are singing loud and proud on this side of the pond as well. Well, Glenn, before we introduce our new guest for today, maybe you can orient the listeners to our social media platforms.
Of course. So on Twitter, it's at Change Talking. On Facebook, it's Talking to Change. And our Instagram account is Talking to Change Podcast. And if you want to contact directly, there's the email, which is podcast@glennhines.com.
Excellent. And certainly, as always, we appreciate any and all feedback and reviews. We have a couple of questions via Twitter that we'll get to today. But before we do that, we are very, very pleased to welcome our good friend and colleague, Katie Brogan Hartley. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone.
All right. Well, so what we love hearing people introduce themselves, both in terms of the work that they do, the professional journey, and then, of course, their early MI story. So, Katie, welcome, and let's hear a bit about you.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much, Glenn and Sebastian, for the invitation and the chance to connect. It just was a nice thing to settle the day around. And I think that this space to connect with potentially others in the world is a really welcoming platform. So the podcast is great. And what I do, I really think of it as three different areas that I like to spend my time. And the first one is I am a nutritionist. I have a doctorate in nutrition and I'm a registered dietitian nutritionist. So I have a lot of passion for understanding how the nourishment we put in our bodies equals what we do in the world, which might be a little preview of what we'll talk about today. I also do a lot of coaching and coding and training and consulting in motivational interviewing, as well as helping public health researchers think about how they might want to translate some of their amazing ways to increase public health in the world to interventions that their staff can implement. So putting those out and into place in the world and then training a lot of times with an MI spirit and base. So my journey to MI started in graduate school. And so many people really talk about this searching, I guess, that I've heard previously on the podcast and a way of being with people that maybe led them to wonder about increasing their own efficacy and comfort with the way the conversation was going. So in graduate school, I worked as a contingent dietitian. And so what this really means is that I worked in a large hospital system. I grabbed hours when I could around grad school duties. And I could be working anywhere across the lifespan, from an expectant high-risk mother all the way to somebody in a rehabilitation facility, children, adults, across the board. And what I came to realize is that with a little bit of chagrin, anytime I walked into a room, I would say, "Hi, I'm Katie, and I'm the registered dietitian." And people weren't necessarily always so happy to see me. I think they really pictured, you know, maybe their favorite food was just going to have a big X in front of it after they were done talking to me, or I was going to be kind of wagging my finger at them. And deeper and deeper into it, I would walk into a room of a mother who was there for her child that really could see some ways to improve their nutrition. And really that look in her eyes of, I just want to help my child. Mm. And so the more that I was able to learn MI, thanks a lot to my mentor, Sylvie Narr, for the opportunity to learn and participate in projects and you know, dive into my academic research from there, I was able to see that it was a way of connecting with people and allowing them to really feel heard and tap into their motivation. So much around that central definition that was very heart forward for me.
Mm. So you've been a very busy woman for a very long time about developing that connection with yourself, and the more particularly it sounds like the way you're describing it is that with the support of really important people around you, you were nurtured to listen to that sound within yourself that was about how to be the best practitioner you wanted to be. And again, you're right that everybody we've spoken to, and I think a lot of people will acknowledge this who are listening, that they know themselves that they want to be the best helper that they can be, and they're always open to being offered new insights to achieve that. And your description there of walking into one room and people not necessarily wanting to see you, but other people actually wanting to see you as well. So what was it about the MI that struck you, that really attracted you? Because there was a whole lot of other ways you could have gone. There was a whole lot of other approaches you could have followed. Why MI?
The thing that I find in motivational interviewing, as I'm learning it and practicing it and teaching it, guiding with others, is the specificity around helpful ways to listen, helpful ways to inquire and evoke, and very helpful ways to respond. So ways to take my thoughts and share them in a way that doesn't maybe overpower and really keeps that partnership and spirit there. And in particular, in the nutrition field, there is oftentimes a lot of education that can go into what we hope that the client or patient gains from the interaction. And doing that in a way that maintains that, you know, ask, share, ask, the second ask, really inviting the partnership back in and being able to elicit first before giving the big piece of information so that you can really tailor it and only offer the piece that might be truly the game changer or helps me to better interact and really take up what MI can do.
You bring up the notion of power and the power differential, I suppose, which bring me back to our last conversation on the podcast with Jane Groves, who talked a lot about power within the context of public health interventions. And so you're describing that providers, in your context, dietitians, but perhaps other providers as well, that to be mindful of this inherent power differential that comes with this sort of professional talking with patient or client, the professional who has this knowledge and information, which can kind of tilt the power differential just in and of itself, right? Like, I know things that you don't, or at least that's an assumption often. And also you're describing from your experience these very vulnerable people, or at least people in very vulnerable situations, which also can enhance that power differential even more. And so, Katie, I wonder what your thoughts would be, or what you found in your use of MI, how using MI in a way to balance that out or to create more of that partnership, how that opens people up more or lends itself to a more productive and helpful conversation for the other person.
Well, I'm really drawn to sharing a bit about some work that I did when I was doing in-home visits in the city of Detroit and working with youth that were overweight. And this first idea of entering into their homes and them having a sort of welcome for me, and really trying to remember that level of spirit and respect that can come from those things, allowing my reflective listening and affirmations to express my appreciation for their time and openness. And to speak further, I just always smile when I think back to a particular participant. We were talking a lot about healthy eating and how to move forward with that. And something that came up was this idea like, okay, well, maybe we could talk about some food label reading and where we might go with that. And so I had a nice handout. I had a sample little drink bottle that we could look at. And, you know, you kind of settle into your routine, right? All right, I'm going to get my teaching mode on maybe a little bit. And I was able to thankfully pause and evoke and say, gosh, what do you know about food label reading? And the next thing you know, she had leaned forward, totally engaged, taken the bottle out of my hand, and went through and really excitedly shared with me what she had learned in her own health class about how to read a food label and where to look and what was important to do. And, you know, and then kind of mixed in some change talk about how she was actually starting to touch on these things when she was doing it already. And a really powerful piece for me, as you can maybe imagine in your head, was, gosh, I just saved a lot of time. I could have also really lost partnership with this individual, this youth who had a lot of passion inside and had a lot of knowledge to share and really gave me a lot of some strengths that she was playing up, that if I hadn't maybe switched into and tuned in, I might have not picked up on.
So that sounds like that experience was a reinforcer for you in the ability of motivational interviewing to make a real difference quickly and to shift your understanding of the relationship as well. It sounds like you were very tuned in to observing the experience of the client and the version of the client that came forward when you offered the opportunity for her to share her knowledge and wisdom. And that deepened the relationship and speeded things up in many, many ways.
Yes, yes. Not only save time with information to provide, but also really sped up engagement and the depth that we were able to work together. And I'm very thankful to the MI tools for those things.
So that sounds like that was quite a formative experience for you. And I'm just wondering what other examples you might have of what it was that as you went on practicing MI that meant that it reinforced for you this was the right approach or a very important approach or a very useful approach for you in your roles in helping other people.
Well, I might translate up to a different level of learner, participant, patient, where my education work and teaching in universities has helped me to think using MI in terms of how to evoke and how to look at what change talk might sound like for the people that I'm working with, the students. And in particular, we were starting off a semester with a group of students, and I put a hammer up on the slide. And all of them were kind of intrigued about, well, what is the hammer? And from that point on, we engaged in a discussion that involved a lot of, you know, open questions and reflections around what often is a nutrition hammer. And as providers and these future students to be providers, what it would be like as an experience for them to get the nutrition hammer and then think about projecting that onto the experience of their own clients and future patients. The way that they, I don't know, I can't say that this was any skillful facilitation from my end other than, you know, being true to my oars and listening, but they really were so open to dive in as well. So giving them the space to express their own spirit and their own heart forwardness, I think that MI allowed, instead of like, let's just dive into lecturing, really came up with things such as, well, in clinical nutrition, if you're visiting a patient in the hospital and they are lying down on their bed, boy, now we go back to a particular power differential that is just clearly created. And what, if anything, even with my words, could I do to be respectful about that? And it's something that really kind of sits with me going forward too, is how much wisdom is in the room in any of the situations that perhaps we're practicing, whether it is, you know, more on the individual level or it's more on a learning level and people kind of spreading their learning forward.
Yeah, wonderful example of an application or maybe multiple applications of MI concepts in a different arena, in the arena of teaching in a university setting, right? The use of metaphor, the use of, you know, creative, evocative discussion. And really wonderful example. And also, I appreciate your comment earlier with your the case example that you just shared. And you know, anytime someone has a real life example of how using MI and starting with the client can actually be a time saver is just, I think, so valuable, because understandably people out there, clinicians of all kinds, struggle with time and feel pressured and rushed and might feel really concerned about starting with what the other person knows, because it might feel like it would waste time. And so appreciate you sharing that that story as well. So I wonder if we might shift into our discussion for today, or at least the somewhat broad, somewhat more narrow topic around physical self-care and nutrition. And maybe that's as much as I'll say about it. And we can start, Katie, with you and your work in that area, and eventually, of course, bringing in some of the MI concepts that people are learning about on this podcast.
Well, the idea of self-care is definitely not a new one. And it comes up for many people in many different ways. So thanks for this opportunity to share a little bit about maybe a lens that I look at it in. And it lies very much with what are the physical ways that we are supporting ourselves and honing the instrument, if I may use another metaphor, for our bodies, for what we want to do and be in the world and who we want to help. And even in the current climate, how we want to protect ourselves. Nutrition, what we eat, what we drink, how we move in the world and move our body, and the rest that we give our body really impact the way that it performs, both physically and mentally. And I think that that really lends itself to an intriguing conversation with practitioners and educators in the MI world.
It really is an interesting shift that we're experiencing here today, that we're exploring the relationship that we have with ourselves and the food that we take, and then ultimately our performance. And that can go in a couple of different ways. Certainly one of the things I'll be curious about later on, I think, is I know that here in the UK and Ireland, when we're doing training, most people are fed with sandwiches at lunchtime. And we have this carb slump, you know, people want to go off to sleep. But it's that idea of taking care of ourselves, Katie, that as practitioners who are out there with hands on supporting other people achieve their potential to the best of our abilities, it's how well are we including ourselves and the people we take care of. And one of those elements of self-care is just nutrition, the food we eat, the drink we use, and the exercise we take. And I wonder, with your experience, and is there a snapshot that you would be suggesting to us as practitioners that some of the things for us to consider in preparation for training or for our work with clients in relation to our nutrition?
Well, the beauty of your inquiry here, Glenn, and really even thinking about as you think about what your trainees are doing, is that the more and more I talk to people about this topic with the frame of their own performance, is that there's less need for giving information about the what people need to do that's better for their body, or they should do that's better for their body. And maybe perhaps we're seeing parallels with a very maybe traditional motivational interviewing conversation, where in fact the information is just a tiny bit, or it doesn't need to be there, because people are really tuned in to what's available around them. And perhaps sometimes the conversation is just more about them pausing, slowing down, and tuning into where that might fit for themselves. You know, if specific things that might be thrown out just in passing when I'm having the conversation are things like, okay, you know, so you what are you doing the night before a training? What are you thinking about putting into your body then in terms of food and drink? What about, you know, how rest might come in, movement either before the training in the morning, or do you need the during training kind of checking in with your physical piece of body, loosening shoulders, moving around. And then again, like how physically they talk about breakfast as an important meal of the day. And that's defined differently for everyone. So that's fine by me, but it's that thought process of, is there a little something that I see as a link that might shift my performance to a level that I see it improving the experience of those I'm working with.
As you're talking about this, Katie, it's making me think about two things, I guess, or two levels of a relationship. And in MI, we often talk about the relationship with our clients or patients and viewing them as the experts of themselves, assuming they have knowledge to offer, wisdom about their past experience and their current experience and their path forward. And that's a really important part of the relationship that we're trying to build with another person. And it almost sounds like you're suggesting the very same thing for ourselves and maybe some awareness of a couple of different places there. One might be places where we might start to kind of go astray, I guess. Of course, being astray is relevant to where you want to go, I suppose, but also being very aware of what you already know and taking some time to pause on what's going on or to think ahead about what the experiences that you're going to have that day, whether it's doing a training or having a clinic full of patients, and to really check in with yourself, because it's likely that you know a lot already about what your body needs and how to prepare for the day. So a relationship with ourselves is, I guess, part of what you're describing then.
Oh, certainly. This ability to, as I mentioned, maybe slow down and tune into spaces that we might not have thought of before or had time to before, or really tapping into the space that we give to other people. It is often a layer of thinking about how maybe as educators, trainers, practitioners of MI, when we notice clients and patients maybe we're working with, that the intensity with which they give of themselves to the people in their lives as caregivers in any sense, and the way that we might use that to help them turn inwards and kind of see the care that they give themselves as beneficial to the individuals they're caring for. We are really in that space also with the care that we and attention that we give our body to be able to turn it outwards and ideally enhance the experience.
And in some ways, it really resonates with the message that's been offered now in response to COVID-19, which is, you know, take care of yourself, you're taking care of the community. Look after yourself, you're looking after the community. And when we spoke to Jane about public health, she mentioned that as well, that by taking care of myself, I'm looking after my community. But as a world, if we are isolating one or two countries across the world in relation to this, then the whole world suffers. And it sounds like that's what you're describing, that many of us as practitioners will be very accustomed to attuning ourselves to our emotional state in advance of a piece of work and paying attention at an emotional level to be empathic through the conversation. But then there's this other element of ourselves, which is our physical self. And that idea of self-awareness and attunement to my physical well-being or my physical state at any given time. And is it in balance? And what am I doing that's either knocking it out of balance, or what can I be doing to bring it back into balance? So it's the interplay between the body, mind, and spirit. Which part are we paying attention to? Are we more accustomed to one bit and neglecting another? And certainly I know myself that, you know, as I listen to you, that the mind and the spirit part of what I do, yeah, I work awfully hard at it. But comfort on a physical level, so I would comfort eat. You know, I would deal with my emotions by having peanut butter and bread and jam. That's my go-to comfort food. And over the years, I've been endeavoring to pay attention when I'm getting bread and jam and peanut butter out and asking the question, am I hungry or am I responding to an emotional need? And it sounds like that's a piece of work in itself that many of us can be thinking about is, do I need this food? Am I actually really hungry, or am I responding to another need in another one of the realms of my spirit or my mind? So that's quite an interesting observation from you, Katie. And I wonder, from your own experience, what is it that you have found that has helped you strike the balance across those three realms in a way that you have found useful?
Well, first, thank you, Glenn, for giving us such a powerful insight in the fact that as individuals and providers and practitioners and the like, again, that's not something that I would have been able to give you information on. Mm. It really had to come from where you were thinking about your bigger picture and your bigger space and allow the concept just to float and see what came up for you. So thank you. And, you know, the vision that I often draw to in these situations of trying to connect all the levels is I really admire athletes. And in particular, I think a lot about an Olympic athlete who is really sacrificing so much for the performance of their instrument, the body. And in reading what a lot of them do, it's so interesting to see how much they tune in to all the different levels, the spiritual support, the mental support, and the physical support to keep them in the best creation of themselves for their performance. Far from an Olympian myself, it just becomes a really nice way to think, gosh, you know, other people really think about these things too. And even though maybe they're so forward with the physicality, the triad, you know, other elements are in there that benefit them.
So then for people wondering how to apply some of these concepts that we're talking about, it seems like a starting point is developing some mechanism of checking in. And that can be a phrase that you might use other phrases, being mindful or using mindfulness as a sort of broader concept of increasing one's awareness and ability to observe our own experience. And Glenn, I wonder if you might speak a bit to your peanut butter and jam story there. Like, I guess, how did you develop your own sense or ability to do that? And it's also one of those things, we all can do it, but to do it intentionally in that way that you're sort of honing yourself and that skill in yourself.
When I reflect on probably what came to me was one of the many times I have endeavored to lose some weight. And I was looking around and I love bread. And the information I was getting was bread isn't great for you, Glenn. So I just started to monitor my relationship with bread, and there it was, piece of bread, peanut butter, jam, delicious, delicious. And I just noticed the idea of, I'm going to have to give this up to get what I want. So there was a real cost to achieving what it was I was considering. And as I hear myself say that, I recognize the challenge that we're exploring here about how to strike a balance. Because if I'm out of balance, then I need to move some weight from one place, perhaps to another. And that comes at a cost. So any benefit comes at a price. And I know that when I'm relapsing, that will be the bell that goes off. When I see the peanut butter in the cupboard, I know I'm getting ready. I'm getting ready to go back to being this other version of myself. But I think what's important for me is that, as Katie was saying, and it's about the relationship and that idea that the comfort eating is one of the ways I have learned to support myself by myself. And one of the challenges for me is to learn to support myself with someone else at that time. If I'm comfort eating, it's usually an emotional need. And I guess the best place for me to turn is to another person more often than not and say, look, this is what I'm struggling with. And just to talk and just to have someone to listen to me. And on some occasions, that's easier than others because I'm so used to doing it that way. That breaking the cycle is a spiral. I'm going round it and up and round it and up. And each time I do it differently and learn a little bit more. But the opportunity to do the easy way is always just sitting there in the cupboard. I'm not sure if that's answering your question, Sarah, but it's certainly this conversation and even that question has made me think a bit more about what it is I do and what it is I can do differently as a consequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it does. I'm often curious how people step back from their in-the-moment experience and either ask themselves questions or just describe what's happening, like you were describing there with the sandwich that you were making. And then what people, I guess, do with that. And, you know, whether it's to say, okay, yep, I'm seeing what I'm doing. let me put the peanut butter away. Or maybe it's, yep, I see what I'm doing. And actually, you know what? I really just want a peanut butter and jam sandwich. Mm. And can I be okay with myself for making that choice? And of course, it can be harsher than that. I imagine it can be, you know, I can't believe I'm doing this again. And it could create its own level of comfort need through a sort of a self-shaming that can happen from going down a particular path with that. But yeah, no, I was just curious to hear how you've honed that, or I guess how that's a skill that you're maintaining.
Yeah, I think it's about relationship. It's, yeah. As Katie has said, and it's about relationship with self as much as relationship with others. And there's that two-way street that's always going on that as practitioners, as teachers, as whatever else, is how much are we actually practicing in our relationships with ourselves, the very thing that we're trying to help other people develop for themselves or in their relationships.
Katie, thoughts on Glenn's sandwich?
It does sound quite delicious. So I definitely noticed the thought that you were able to share just in terms of starting to ask yourself evocative questions and understand where your own change talk about the conversation inside and the sustained talk about it might help you. But also very much, it sounded like there was elements of MI spirit within the way that you were talking to yourself. And maybe Sebastian, you're kind of talking about the different ranges of ways that we have these conversations with ourselves and looking at, well, okay, where do we pull in and how this compassion, acceptance, the partnership, along with our evocation, just to acknowledge that, you know, we're going to get to balance, and balance isn't snapping our fingers, you know, is something that is a steady process. Mm.
And so we've been talking about nutrition here, and you're referencing other parts of maintaining balance, the physical or the spiritual. And I guess in keeping with our broader topic of physical self-care and nutrition, there are different, different cues that might prompt us to do that stepping back experience. In a nutritional sense, it might be a hunger cue or maybe a more emotional cue, like Glenn was saying. In your experience, Katie, both for yourself and maybe helping others with this, like what are some of the cues, I guess, with regard to physical self-care that you found that people can use to tune into what their needs are and to sort of guide their decision-making?
The question that Glenn put forth about maybe what happens in the afternoon of a training after a certain type of lunch that, you know, maybe people don't have a lot of choice in, you know, speaks a little bit to this level of nutrition and digestion and being just fatigued. Though people will often notice cues around maybe how much caffeine they need to get through something and relate that to what kind of rest that they get and how they pattern their sleep. And certainly we can think about some of the twinges we might feel in our bodies as cues for ways to think, well, are there physical needs that movement can bring in that will better increase my ability to be a good provider and an educator and a practitioner? Certainly if I am really drawn into thinking about an ache or a pain that I have in my back, for example, you know, does that allow my mind to stay on the task that I'm asking it to do? Whereas if I kind of work in more movement to work through that or get assistance with it, am I better focused?
So again, it's back to listening. It's that willingness to listen to ourselves or listen to aspects of ourselves. Listen to my body. And I imagine for a lot of people, that's an interesting way of thinking about it. That our body speaks to us in its physical presentations. The aches, the pains are telling us something's going on, and the body needs us to come on board to right that in some way, either by ourselves or with the support of other people, but also with the idea of our own hunger, that hunger is speaking to us as well. And we then have a choice about what we put in our body. Is it going to be bread and we're going to have a carb slump in the afternoon? Or is it that, given the fact that most people that are probably listening to this live very, very busy, fast lives, that it's so much about convenience and a cup of coffee and a couple of bars of chocolate keep me moving fast, but it's false. It's a false energy because it stocks up. and you put on a bit of weight, and then you've got your own reaction to that. But I'll be honest with you, it's, you know, I've got the messages, I get them, but it's when I'm rushing around, it's almost like I'm always drawn to something that keeps me going fast. And I think other people will identify that. And I suppose what I'm curious about is when you meet people in that situation, Katie, what are the types of things do you invite them to think about, or what evocation do you offer to get them to shift their awareness or their perception or their response to that normal, give me something quick, I'm going fast?
Well, I think first, it is often that I am having this conversation more often with individuals that do have the resources to be able to make different choices. And I think a bigger picture, which you've kind of returned us back to, and in terms of public health and the health of our world, is, you know, being able to have this type of a conversation ideally with everyone. Mm. And so that's a much bigger conversation than we're having here, but one to kind of bring into the room of our thoughts sometimes. But for those individuals that are thinking and also being very honest and open and real, because I don't know that you can acknowledge the power in coming in and saying, yeah, this is really what I'm thinking. And I'm going to be very honest with myself as I think about this situation and perhaps thinking about moving myself forward with different ways to increase my physical performance. And that oftentimes taps into a lot of values for people. And we've heard conversations in this podcast before that allowing somebody to really allow their values to guide them forward is where there is a lot of openness and power in just their feeling that sense of autonomy about their decisions with where their values sit. And so I think that is where I spend time when I'm able to with people.
Yeah, I think you've touched on values at different points today in our conversation, whether it's our desire to be the best trainer or educator we can be, and sort of having that be a bit of the, I guess, the guiding force to consider. Maybe my need for an extra cup of coffee is related to sleep. And if I want to be the best trainer that I can be and be there for my clients or whatever it might be, then let me take a look at my sleep patterns leading up to that. So I imagine, not surprisingly, anchoring a lot of our discussion and our own ways of caring for ourselves is anchored in our values.
Caring for ourselves and as you point out there, caring for others.
Yeah.
Our ability so much, it seems, when I am talking with providers, I think individuals that MI resonates the most with are helping people that are at some level of risk for helping others while maybe not paying as much attention because they're giving so much of themselves. And it just becomes a thought about, well, are there things and ways that, again, if my body is in mind are supported, I will even get to the next level of where I hope to do for my helping with people.
Yeah, quite the invitation. Look after your body to improve your practice. Look after yourself, your physical self, to become a better trainer, to become a better practitioner. So I'm conscious of our time, and we have two questions that came in on Twitter. One of them, actually both of them from previous guests, Mallory DeSalle, who talked about affirmations, and she asked the question, this sounds so important now than ever, Katie Brogan-Hartley, how can we help our kids with self-care while we are practicing it as parents? MI Spirit, self-care for all ages. And I guess if this has gone out during the pandemic, that there will be a lot of people who will be sitting around with their children for more hours than is normal. So I wonder what thoughts or ideas you have about that.
Yeah, well, I think the first thing that really strikes me as we think about MI and self-care for all ages is I have the gift of knowing Mallory, and I know how much she values her family and her children. And so a motivating factor for her to make these changes is tapping into something like that. Mm. And so perhaps as I kind of think about the bigger picture as a provider in this situation, it is that, wow, she's really kind of diving into those as her way of moving it forward. And just this idea that goodness, as we, again, want to take better care of others, showing them by taking care of ourselves and modeling that is such a powerful piece. And that's not just an MI support there. And thinking about now, there's a lot more opportunity for self-care to include our kids since we're with them in this moment a lot more. And how are we involving them in food preparation, depending on their age and in the decision-making around what's going on our plate. And, you know, my son and I, who is 4, were having a conversation about carrots at dinner time yesterday. And he's not a fan of carrots, but he really was able to identify that carrots help him to run faster and maybe to see some houses that were a farther distance away from the window that he couldn't see without binoculars. So, you know, hey, if I want to support bionic vision, I'm going to, you know, so I think that those kinds of conversations and just being open to evoking there and offering some autonomy and all of the good ways that we can pull that in allows us to model self-care and include children in our self-care.
It strikes me that, you know, as people are thinking about how to take care of themselves and take care of other people and what are some strategies to do that, it's like in some ways the answers are right there in front of us all along. Mallory's question comes from a place of caring for her kids. And we were just speaking about values, right? And so talk about a value that would then guide us perhaps to have more awareness for how we're taking care of ourselves and others. But what an adorable anecdote about using your 4-year-old son's curiosity and what he's interested in, and how you can, well, not so much play along, but really truly tap into and use the reasons that he would have to eat a carrot. Conveniently enough, it dovetails nicely into physical self-care. But it's not about, you know, it wasn't a lecture or something like we have to do this now. It was just such a gentle way of evoking from him why he might take the plunge and have himself a carrot.
Yes. And certainly, I know I kind of think about Glenn describing his thought process of the peanut butter jam and bread and kind of where that could go at times. And certainly as a parent in a dinner time situation, you know, maybe it doesn't always go towards the evocation and some reflective pieces. And yet when it can, or when it might, or when it does, I think that that's us playing out ways and tools that our conversations with MI help us to present more of that self-care when we're focused on those kinds of target behaviors, like in the physical realm.
Mm. And again, it's back to that, where am I at this moment? Am I aware of it? That I can be patient with my children? Can I be patient with my partner? Can I be patient with my friends as they behave in a way that potentially could trigger me otherwise? For me to then need to take control, and that striking a balance and remembering what role am I in right now and what is my purpose that's going to be meaningful for this other person. And let me then invite you to our second question, which is from Stan Steindl, who came on previously to talk about compassion. And Stan says, one of the things I really appreciated from Katie's workshop in Tallinn, which was at the Mint Forum, which is the Motivational Doing Trainers Forum last year, was the importance of sustenance and hydration and self-care. So I think you've begun to speak to that already, Katie, and he just asked, would love to hear more about that.
Thanks, Stan, for coming to that and for offering this question. And the workshop itself was really focused so much on maybe even piggybacking on the question, Glenn, that you had about what happens during a training and how can we better facilitate the experience, both for ourselves as trainers and for the learners that are sitting with us. So the workshop was pretty interesting in that everyone was asked to really think about their own physical self-care and how are they hydrating their body and making sure that they have enough of the right kinds of energy to be thinking and responding to their learners in the room the best way that they could. Yet so naturally, this group of individuals that was really focused on helping people went to, how do I make this experience better for the people that are learning, that are in the room? So maybe that value that we've
kind of been touching on is again, how do I model self-care for the learners? And do I have a glass of water next to where I'm speaking and people are actually seeing me take sips of water? Do they also see me move around the room and stretch my body? Have I introduced areas that people are up and out of their seats? You know, personally, in my trainings, I find that anytime we come back from a break, particularly after lunch, I do a mindfulness, even a 3-minute mindfulness piece, so that people are able to connect a little bit more. And UCLA has a wonderful audio resources that are available for people just to listen to. And so those types of things not only help us to kind of tune into our own physicality and nutrition and movement and everything, but also the learners and giving them a better space. And Sebastian, you might recall a training that we did together where we put together some snacks. And, you know, this was focused on having a little bit of control over what was served at the snacking portion of the day, as opposed to like the larger meals, and also the, you know, fortitude of having some of the coverage for that financially. So when you do have that space as an educator, trainer, provider, and bringing in things that might play more into the balance. So things like bringing in nuts and vegetables, and not maybe just the kind of more sugar focused or carbohydrate foods that can, you know, give a quicker response, but then not really sustain the body for a longer period of time. And it was, I don't know if you remember, it was kind of fun to see people's expressions when they came in and saw this wasn't just a bowl of candy at the center of the table. Although there were chocolates too.
Yeah, no, I remember that. And actually, one of the things we've been exploring today is ways that we might step back a bit or ask ourselves a question or to reflect a bit about what we're noticing in our immediate environment. And I guess I would say that would be a way to describe the experience of those trainees when they saw, I think it was these like mini bell peppers that you had gotten at, if I'm remembering correctly. And even for me, I remember thinking, what an unusual thing to have at a training, and just how that could lead somebody to reflect a bit about, what if I had a mini bell pepper instead of the donut or Danish that's often served at trainings, and that how that could lead to a lot of their own consideration of the choices that they make, both in that moment, but maybe in a broader kind of way. And I guess another thing I'm hearing you talk about, Katie, is modeling, having a bottle of water handy and doing some stretching when you can and movement around the room. It does offer a way of, I mean, it's not even informing, it's not even really guiding, it's just demonstrating what you value in your own self-care. And it can be offered as a gentle reminder or suggestion for people that's something that they might do also. But again, also in keeping with some of these sort of partnership ideas and maintaining this power differential or eliminating that, I guess, that we were talking about earlier.
And what also comes up for me as I was listening to this was the idea of being proactive. One is us as trainers or helping practitioners providing these new choices for people. But also it's recognizing, I imagine for most of us, when we go to training, we have an expectation, they'll feed me. And as a consequence of that, I'll eat what's put in front of me because it's free. And it's back to that proactive aspect of self-care, which is, do I bring what I need just in case they haven't got what I need? And again, it's back to that resourcefulness, both emotionally, but also financially. Do I have the resourcefulness to prepare myself or prepare for myself the type of food I'm going to need today? Not because I'm at a training, but because I've got to live my life today and it's in a train of how I'm trying to take care of myself. And I suppose one of the things for us to consider as listeners, you know, how often do we go unmindfully to a place and just take what's given? How often have we thought, as you suggested to us at the beginning, Katie, was where am I going? What am I doing? What do I need? And will it be there when I arrive? And if not, can I bring it with me? And again, it's that price of mindfulness, of curiosity, that price of self-care, you know, that I'm going to have to do a wee bit of work with it. I'm going to do work at this. But what you're saying is that the work brings with it its own rewards, that the balance is struck, that the three dimensions, the body, mind, and the spirit, start to work in much more consistent and cohesive ways for us to achieve more of our potential when the three of them are working in better balance. And that's where the self comes in, that pays attention to those three domains and which ones speak, which part of us needs taken care of, and how do we respond to that request to be looked after.
Yeah, thanks for putting it in the way of more of saying cohesion, because maybe, you know, balance is not quite the right word, but the cohesion and attention that we can give to these different elements becomes something. Whereas as helping people, do we see our own self-care fitting in?
So one of the questions we could ask listeners today is, what would need to happen for you to think about the cohesion of those aspects of yourself? When you look at those three aspects of yourself, how struck are you at how balanced they are? And is there any part of you looking for more attention than another? And in what ways might you begin to redress that need in a way that's going to be useful? And I wonder, again, from your own experience, what other evocative questions could you offer here today, just to invite myself and Seb, but also the audience, to be a bit more reflective and considerate of our physical well-being?
As a bit of an activity, as people maybe get into this, they are invited to think about a time perhaps when they made a different type of choice or did something different from what they normally do, whether it be something moving towards better self-care or something moving away from better self-care, and see if they can identify what shifted in their cohesion. And maybe specifically today in that physical reaction of their body and their focus in their mind as a result of that. And so, you know, maybe that loop kind of starts to give us some feedback as to where we do need to spend time or don't need to spend time. I certainly have friends and colleagues that pay more attention to one aspect of physical self-care than other aspects. You know, I'm an individual that, you know, notices a lot about what I put into my body and how my body feels after I do that. Other people notice a lot more around doing a short yoga practice to move or their sleep. So maybe an evocative question around what area speaks to you, and then how does that reaction, what information does that reaction give you?
So we have our own individual makeup. What are our own cues around cohesion, and what are the places that we're aware of the most, right? So you're describing nutrition and specific food choices and how your body feels afterwards, and others it might be more focused on sleep and need for naps. I'll put myself in that category, as both of you know. Others might be around physical tension, and perhaps that's a cue that maybe a brief stretch or a yoga practice might be in order. And so it's not really so much that there's one right way to do it, although I imagine people could argue that, well, everyone needs sleep, everyone needs nutrition, and so these are important things for everyone to do. But it's not about doing it any particular way or doing it the way that you do it. It's, I guess, part of it is what people might do after listening to this episode is to ask themselves, you know, and it can be around cohesion or maybe another word that makes more sense to them, but what am I saying to myself? And how can I listen better to myself and to be aware that there's choices that are bringing me closer to taking care of myself and other choices that I might make that don't. And also, I guess, to highlight something that Stan talked about around compassion and sort of turning that inward also and making sure we're not really harsh with ourselves if, you know, the next time we make ourselves that peanut butter and jam sandwich, that's an important component to all of this that we're exploring as well.
I don't know why this thought came to me, but a few years ago we were having some work done in the garden, and I received some great wisdom from my gardener when he said, when you get tired, don't stop the work, just take a rest. And it was just that shift of, you know what, I feel like chucking it, but rephrasing it to, okay, I need a rest, and for that to be important enough for me to take, but it's part of the process. Now I'm going back. Okay, I have been watching what I'm eating, but you know what? I really do. I am hungry, and you know what? I'm going to give myself the treat of a peanut butter sandwich. But it's I'm eating it and enjoy the taste rather than to meet some emotional need. But take it in moderation, that it doesn't become my diet for the next 6 weeks again. which can and does happen for me. You know, once I have that first bit, it's back to that speedy, open the cupboard, sandwich, boom, boom, boom. Pour some milk and away we go. And it's just picking up the pieces again. And those evocative questions you've been asking today have been very helpful, even in my own thinking about the cohesion and the balance that I have at the moment during this transition. And again, I think for a lot of people who are listening to this during COVID-19, their circumstances have changed so dramatically that there will be a lot of demands emotionally and psychologically and spiritually that are taking place, that with how you respond to it, I guess maybe it's because we're in Ireland without stereotyping us Irish, but there were queues outside the off licenses here when we were told that there was going to be a lockdown. And one of the concerns is that one of the ways we're going to cope with this isolation is to drink more alcohol, take more drugs. And maybe it's just about inviting the audience to think, no, how have you been dealing with this? And is it in accordance with your values? Is it in accordance with who you're striving to be? And if not, what opportunities exist for you today to begin to see this as an opportunity for you to begin to do it slightly differently, that under stressful situations like this and in the future, you may have different choices in about how you take care of yourself while the environment doesn't suit.
For those in American audiences, I guess, or for those Americans listening, the off-license, Glenn, I assume that's a place where you can buy alcohol.
Yes. When I visited there recently, you showed me that in America you can buy some beer in ordinary shops, but you have to go to another shop for the spirits. We're fortunate we can get both in the same place.
And it led to a great deal of interest and maybe panic shopping that these would be closed down for you.
This is true. They were closed for about 2 days when it was decided that they weren't essential. But very significantly, the government were approached by healthcare providers for people with addictions and says, look, you can't shut us down. These people, there are people who actually need alcohol to get through this. So it's an interesting reality that for some people, the off-license, as we call it, the off-license is the pharmacy. It's the food store. It's what gets them through. And by taking it away from them, we were putting their well-being at risk.
Yeah, another call to be a bit flexible in how we think about things. I appreciate your comments too about COVID-19, and it is asking us to change, hopefully temporarily, pretty significant ways for a lot of people, how we live our lives, but also to be on the lookout for opportunities that our current circumstances are inviting us to perhaps take advantage of. And, you know, just thinking about Mallory's question around self-care for kids and how we can support that, I think I've noticed since my kids have been under not going to school, virtual education and the like, one of my kids in particular is modeling good physical self-care for me. And I think I've been more active because, you know, two of my kids in particular are quite active and playing sports, and that's completely stopped. And one of my kids in particular has been quite consistent with the at-home exercises, running and soccer skills and things like that. And so it's been quite a nice shift. It's allowed for more time for myself and my two sporty kids to be more active physically and to shoot baskets in the driveway or to go on a run. So I should thank him when I get home for helping me be more physically active.
So we have come to a point where I realize we've already been talking for more than an hour. To move forward, Kitty, one of the things we always offer our guests is an opportunity to talk about anything at this point. Doesn't have to be AMI related, but just anything that is catching your attention at the minute that you might share with us in the audience.
Well, I have to say that our family has recently relocated from South Florida back to our home state of Michigan, but we've gone very far north into northern Michigan in a city called Petoskey. And it offers a lot of outdoor experiences that is an exciting thing for me to take a nod to. And even more so with my passion around nutrition and the community. Yesterday, we actually went out to the farm to pick up our groceries. We're connecting with the local farms in the area and what they have to offer. So not only were we admiring and the chickens
you know, getting around. We were getting our eggs and our chicken for the week, and picking up carrots. So how the circle of all of this comes together with my son and perhaps fostering a lot more of that. So I think that those kinds of opportunities here in the United States and here in our world are just really amazing, and I'm really thankful for them.
Mm-hmm. Another, we've had many of these, but another reminder that some of the answers, so to speak, are right there in front of us and they're around us. And to have the resources available to you in your community, while I imagine quite different than the resources in South Florida, there are probably resources in South Florida where there's produce and things that are more local and can support the broader community of where you live. So another wonderful reminder there. Katie, another thing we ask our guests as we're wrapping up is if anyone wants to reach out to you and with questions or comments, are you okay with that? And so how can they contact you and maybe some other resources where you are doing work?
I would love to hear from anyone and continue a conversation. My website is my last name, Hartlieb, Hartlieb, nutrition.com. And you're also welcome to send me an email at Katherine, Katherine.Hartlieb, Hartlieb, @gmail.com.
Excellent. Thank you. And again, just to remind people that you can contact us on the social media at Change Talking, Talking to Change on Facebook. And our Instagram is Talking to Change Podcast. And for questions, reflections, and ideas for future episodes, the email is podcast@glennhines.com.
Excellent. Well, Katie, thank you so much. It's been great talking with you today and hearing your insights about all that you're doing in the world of physical care and nutrition. So thank you so much.
Well, thanks for the warm welcome and the conversation, Glenn and Sebastian.
You're welcome. Thanks, Katie. Take care. Take care, everybody.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody.